In July of 2014, almost a year before marriage equality became the law of the land, the congregation of the First UU Church of Nashville received a love letter. I'd like to share it with you as our reading this morning because I have no doubt that this congregation has been and continues to be a source of strength and love to others in the wider community, just as the congregation in Nashville was to the writers of the following email sent to the church. We don't always remember this, but just in being who we are, our Unitarian Universalist institutions nurture life beyond our walls. Thank you, 25 years later. On July 15, 1989, your church and your pastor welcomed my partner and I as a couple when all other religions and spiritual organizations treated us as disgusting. Your pastor married us, and he and your congregation reminded us that there were people in the world who actually practiced unconditional love and acceptance. In large part because of you, my partner and I never gave up on ourselves or on the hope that we too belonged in this life as full and vibrant participants. We raised two children. We continue to work hard in public service jobs, trying to give back to others in society. And we try always to pay forward what was given. Thank you for being brave and true to the deepest and truest spiritual principles long before anyone else had the courage to do it. With gratitude and respect, Susan and Giselle, married 25 years in the eyes of God, thanks to the courage of your congregation on 7/15. After reading that email a couple summers ago, I corresponded with Susan. She and Giselle gave me permission to share this letter in worship, and I learned that Susan had also written a blog post in celebration of their 25th anniversary. Reflecting on the unanimously positive responses she's received on her blog, which are in striking contrast to the messages she received from the world in which she came of age, Susan wrote, "The world can learn and grow. I'm convinced of this, and that the future can be brighter than anyone thinks if we respond to others with love." As we enter now into a time of silent meditation, I invite you to consider the growing edges of your attention to your life and to the world around you. Where might you respond with more openness? Who needs your yes? How have your yeses, your love, already rippled out into building the brighter future? The future can be brighter than anyone thinks if we respond to others with love and openness. May it be so. So, I think it was almost a month ago, I told Jill that the title for the sermon would be The Joy of Yes. And then all these mornings I'm waking up and scanning my email and going, oh my goodness, it's been a heartbreaking month. Over and over and over and over again. And Thursday, I woke up and there was more email about Dallas. And Jill and I started exchanging emails. And I decided I still wanted to do this sermon because it still goes somewhere I think we really need to go, even in light of everything that's been happening. And it's not just this last month. It's not even just the last year and a half. It's not, you know. I want us to think about yes, but I know that we are in a place where we are all feeling lots of different feelings and very aware of the world around us and the feelings and the realities and new awareness of other people and the capabilities of human beings to do things for good and for love and out of fear. Here we go. This is going to be a little less joyful, but still a whole lot of yes, I hope. So as I've been getting through my life for these decades now, I find myself feeling alternately hopeful and despairing that the world will indeed move toward that brightness invoked in Susan's reflections. I would have said a year ago that I've begun to give more attention to a certain inclination toward joy and wonder, toward delight, in what E.E. Cummings calls everything which is natural, which is infinite, which is yes. I don't feel that this morning. I feel like there have been, and you may feel this way too, there have been so many things lately that I want to say no to. We need to say no to many things. And yet, I want to call us back to thinking about that yes, and who and what needs our yes right now. Some of us, I think, are more inclined toward being yes people. I'm not actually one of those. I tend to worry, and I'm really good at no. People who live with me and people who've worked with me know this. I often will tell people after a couple exchanges, you know, if I say no, you might want to try asking me again. Because I will soften up. I'll always see the problems with things first, and then I'll come back and go, oh, well, yeah, we could probably make that work. And yet, as I move along, I have started to realize that sometimes, oftentimes, approaching life with a yes is not really any less safe than worrying about protecting and provisioning myself and my family, or remembering all the strategies I've been told can help me avoid or deal with this or that problem. I'm sure you don't have any problem believing me when I tell you, you know, don't worry is a strategy that can be a lot more fun. But I'm also going to argue that joy and wonder, curiosity about the newness of things and people who appear in front of us and claim our attention, these things can be far more effective in building the world about which we dream, for which we yearn. Many of us grow up in homes, churches, and a culture that, in general, distrust human nature, that fearfully believe that there is something about us that, if left unchecked, will run amok in the world, inflicting harm on others and damning the self, literally or figuratively, to hell. This is not the only belief about human beings operative in our culture, but it is one of the dominant ones, and it is subtly pervasive. It suggests that the best or safest response to many requests springing from lived experience and the desires of individuals is no. As I've said, I myself am rather good at no, and no is an important and a useful word. Without it, yes means less and can even be dangerous. Please, 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 everyone, do not misconstrue anything I say here this morning to mean that I think every question should be answered in the affirmative. I really, really, really do not. And yet, when I look up from the busyness of my life and notice that things seem to be working, maybe I feel like I've been able to be in the right place at the right time and say something that somebody needed, I find sometimes that I can trace that back to a willingness to say yes. I also think that I have Unitarian Universalism to thank for some of that, for much of that even. And I'm going to explain. You may not be aware, or you might not find it at all surprising, that the office of First UU Church in Nashville, and I'm sorry, I'm giving you all these examples, not that I think Nashville's all that great, it's just the context I come out of. But that the office there in that church typically fields many calls every year from non-members looking for a wedding officiant. Since the called ministers are typically unavailable for non-member weddings, the board legally recognizes several chaplains for this purpose, of whom I have been one for several years. I've had the privilege of working with many couples, and based on this work, I've begun saying things like, "We UUs are people of the yes." When I first meet or talk with couples preparing for marriage, many of them come with questions or requests to which they have received or anticipate receiving negative responses from others. They are sometimes hesitant or apologetic about their requests. Can we get married even if we can't get or don't want a marriage license? Can we get married on my mother's farm in Kentucky? Can we have a service that all the guests will take seriously even if we never mention God? Can we express our beliefs without being disrespectful of our family members' beliefs? Even, can we get married in the middle of our annual Christmas party? True story. I don't always say yes, at least not right away. We had to talk about that holiday party idea. But more often than not, I can say yes because I serve a religious tradition and a local congregation that encourage me to be radically accepting of all people, and trust me to apply our principles and purposes in freedom and integrity. So I can say, yes, I believe in the separation of church and state so we don't have to be able to file a marriage license. Yes, we can write a wedding service that expresses your spirituality and understanding of partnership while also respecting other beliefs and feeling worshipful to your loved one. Yes, we can plant a tree, light a candle, exchange vows in the backyard, involve your children, surprise your party guests. Yes, this can be important, serious business, and also As often happens in my intellectual life, once I start working on an idea, I start seeing it everywhere, both in the present and in the strands of my past. Having started thinking about yes as opening up new possibilities for navigating life, I can now clearly see this theme woven through my life experiences, my observations, and even the movies I've watched. Does anyone else still remember the 1995 movie Dead Man Walking? I remember watching, back when it was new and I actually saw movies on the really big screen, as Sister Helen Prejean, played by Susan Sarandon, was asked about her work with a prisoner on death row. Why are you helping him? Hearing her answer may have been the first time I sat up and noticed a real unqualified yes. She said quite simply, she didn't justify her work. She didn't say she had carefully weighed the pros and cons and selected the course of action that served the greatest good for the greatest number. She merely indicated that she recognized him as a human being, worthy of dignity and respect. She paid attention. I don't recall how Sister Helen got into it, but as I remember the movie, she did not go out of her way to look for this work. She had moved to New Orleans to work with her order among the poor, and somehow the everyday living out of her values led her to what ultimately became her ministry with convicted criminals. Someone asked, and she was in a position to say yes, and to recognize that yes as congruent with her values. And looking back over my life, I recognize that another place in which I saw the habit of saying yes modeled has been in parenting. When I was the mother of very young children, I read a lot of books and blogs and magazine articles about parenting. The ones that really stuck with me, partly because I recognized them as suggesting something new to me anyway, were those that encouraged me to think about the difference between responding with no and responding with yes to these little folks who were, it seemed sometimes, running my life. I can't even remember now where specific ideas came from, but repeatedly these resources encouraged me to pay attention to what life feels like for parent and for child, and to say yes as often as possible, to develop skill in affirming the desire or interest or need behind a request, even when the answer to the question needed to be no. This, like the idea of helping someone simply because they asked, was a little new to me at the time, but perhaps because it resonated with the best of my own experiences as a person growing up, the times, in essence, that someone said yes to me. This idea of saying yes as often as possible, rather than the bits of advice about molding and forming and correcting the young child, is what stuck with me and influenced my best parenting. I should say, in all humility, I'm not prescribing parenting styles to any of you. This is just what worked for me. And I'm not done yet. So whether or not this has actually been successful and effective remains to be seen. Of course, not much of my ordinary life, yours or mine, looks like a blockbuster movie or perfect parenting. But I have been seen in the many layers of Unitarian Universalist life, from the individual to the congregational to our larger institutions, a number of ways in which we choose to pay attention to what arises as we go about our everyday lives and choose to say yes to the full personhood of others, and in so saying, help to build a better future. Since I do not yet know this congregation well enough to give, I can give a few examples of your life together. But again, forgive me, I'm going to give some examples from my home congregation's work. There is the weddings I've already talked about. I worked for over a decade as the membership coordinator at First UU. So we actually had part-time staff person whose job it was to do what all of you have to do, which is be nice to the new people who show up. And so you probably know, just like I did, but it was my job actually to pay attention to the fact that a lot of people come and the first thing, whether it's an email or them standing in front of me on a Sunday morning, a lot of them want to know, am I welcome? I would get emails and they sometimes broke my heart that would say things like, I see you say you are a welcoming congregation. Does that mean me? Will you welcome me? I am. And they'll tell me about themselves, about their partner, about who they are. And the great good thing about my job was I got to email back and say, yes, we mean exactly you. We mean you. Please come. Please be here on Sunday. Look for me. Talk to a greeter. So there's also been social justice outreach. I know you were involved in the local community. I know, for instance, several years back when the mosque in Murfreesboro, there was a new mosque being built, and I know this congregation was active in trying to be a public presence saying, this is not a problem. We can do this. Murfreesboro can have a mosque in it, and we can all be all right. And I thank you for that work. That is important. Good work. The Nashville congregation has been involved in the last several years in prison ministry, which has been very difficult. It has a lot of ups and downs because of the bureaucracies of the state and the fix inside and outside the prison. But it all grew out of individual people who maybe had a job as a prison chaplain and then said, well, what if we had a Friday night service once a month? And those people going and just being with the inmates who cared to show up on a Friday night for a worship service and developing real relationships. Now, the First UU Nashville actually now has a few members who are residents of Tennessee prisons because of that. It's very non-flamboyant work. It's just showing up and being with people. But it's been very powerful both inside and outside. And I could go on. There are lots and lots of examples. And as I review my list of moments and projects that make me glad to be a Unitarian Universalist, it seems to me that our capacity to say yes is not simply a decision made in a vacuum. Our yeses, the ones that matter, the ones that feel like moments in which we recognize, oh yes, this is why I am. Those moments often rely on a particular set of circumstances. We can say yes in ways that matter because one, we have institutional support and resources. Weddings officiated by our UU ministers or designated chaplains for non-UU couples happen because our congregations are known in the community as a resource, because we have boards that attend to state laws about who can sign a marriage license, because UU congregations encourage its ministers to educate ourselves so we are ready to say yes to helping couples of all sorts craft meaningful celebrations. Because you support us in supporting folks who were not always respected fully and trusted. Local UU social engagement in the larger community is most sustainable when it grows out of the life of the congregation and its members, and because it is supported and nurtured within the context of the ongoing work of church committees and councils. We can say yes in ways that matter because, number two, we have clarity about our values as expressed in our seven principles. When someone makes a request, we don't automatically jump to yes, but the courage it takes to risk doing something new or outside the norm is bolstered by having a framework that articulates our intention to build respect for every unique individual and life circumstance, support the search for truth, to do justice and live in right relationship, and to honor the interconnections at every level of human existence and inner. Thirdly, we can say yes in ways that matter because we cultivate spiritual development and growth, which means, among other things, that we practice the disciplines of attention. Intention is really good, too, though. We gather in worship to hear new ideas, to reflect on our lives, to sit together in silence and in conversation, so that we learn to notice our lives, to see and hear how we are connected, and how we can most effectively respond to whatever and whomever shows up in front of us. I want to share something, you know, so I told you I'm starting to, well, I don't know if I told you, I'm starting to not like my email in the morning, but this week I found some things, and they were in response to all the things that I didn't particularly enjoy reading, that I just want to share. And I think it's important to note context. I've read a lot of things. I've read things written by black men. I've read things written by white women. I think it's very important to notice how those are different. And I'm not going to talk about that right now. I encourage you, as you're reading, to notice, because I think one of the things I read has a sentence that says, "Whiteness is blindness." And I think many of us, if we sit with that for a little while, will recognize that there are things we just don't have to see, and we often prefer not to see, and that is true. But there were things I read this week from a couple of white women about being white and about what it means to practice that I just want to share with you. One is from someone whose name is Danielle Laporte. I don't know her very well. I like her email. She sends out an email every week, and sometimes I read it, sometimes I don't. But sometimes it's something really extraordinary like this. And she tells about traveling to India to meet with the Dalai Lama. The week before her group was there, there had been a horrible event in which some monks were murdered by other monks. And so the story was on everyone's mind, much as many of these stories we've been aware of have come into this room with us today. So the first thing they did when they sat down, I'm imagining tea, but she doesn't actually say that, was to offer condolences to the Dalai Lama. Ah, yes. Thank you for your thought. This is why we practice, for times like these when compassion is so necessary. He didn't nod in mutual disdain. He didn't show any drama. He was soft. This is why we pray. For times like these, you don't need to forgive until you need to forgive. You don't need nerves of steel until you need nerves of steel. You don't need to call on your reserves of compassion or fortitude or faith until you've used up everything else. This is why, even when life is ambling along nicely and there's food in our spiritual cupboard, we still make sure that we get to yoga or the reading group. When we're healthy and happy, we make sure to dance. We hit the court. We pick up the phone to check in. We drop by with something in hand. When we're believing in the fairness and the glory of human nature and the so-called fates, we keep seeking and meditating on reality and praying for healing, even though nothing obvious ails us. We keep up with our spiritual practice because the day will most certainly come, as it does whether you are a wholehearted lover or in denial of grace. You will be struck down or ground down by life. It can come in tiny, tearing heartbreaks 5 times a day. Just walking through your neighborhood. It could come in the name of tragedy that could only happen once in a lifetime. And you will need to withdraw the insights that you put into your heart's escrow. And you will need to call on your people, the unseen and the ones right in front of you, to help you meet the day. You will be interrupted. You will be called on to expand. You will be asked who you are and why you are here. I read this a couple of days, actually, before Dallas happened. Why we go to church, too. This is why we come and gather. Another person whose emails I read some weeks sent something on Friday in the middle of the day. And she says, this is another white woman. Her name is Anna Konecki. She notes that if we are white, it is time for us to have extra courage because we have had extra privilege, whether we feel it or not. She has a challenge. She said, here, this is just your challenge, just for today. Do something that is radically kind. And she writes, something close to home. Something that takes courage. For most of us, that will be something almost embarrassingly small, and that's okay. We have to build our courageous compassion muscles slowly and gently, just like any muscle. You don't just wake up and become Mother Teresa or Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. one day. You practice so that in the moment when the big decision suddenly presents itself, your muscle memory kicks in with automatic courageous compassion. Today, practice on something that's close at hand. Buy a cup of coffee for someone. Set a boundary with a bully. Speak up on behalf of someone who can't. Go to therapy and heal your past so you can change the emotional DNA you pass down in the world. Do something that makes you bigger. Something that puts you on the side you want to be on. And let's show this world what it means to be human. I'm not sure, always, that I know what it means to be human. I do know. Some days I don't even know what I know. I know that my heart's being broken, and I know that other people are suffering and need to attend to that. And the way we attend, I think part of the reason I wanted to say practice is part of what we do. And some of that doesn't look directly applicable, but I think it all is. And it is, I just love this building automatic courageous compassion. I want that muscle. At the end of the day, the end of the week, at the end of the heartbreaking month, we are all, and by that I don't just mean we Unitarian Universalists who gather in community, but I mean we, all of we human beings. We are all seeking assurance about what Susan in the email at the beginning calls belonging in this life as full and vibrant participants. Unitarian Universalism provides some powerful tools for learning to enter more fully into our lives and for committing to supporting others in their own lives. Beneath our persistent questions about belonging lies a more basic question. Am I a real person? Ideally, the answer to that question would always and everywhere be an enthusiastic yes. But often the response to am I really a person of worth and dignity is some variation of yes, yes, of course you are, but you know, it would be best if you would just, and you can fill in the blank here, look normal, love someone of the appropriate gender, follow all the laws, even when they're wrong. Speak using acceptable words. Not annoy or embarrass others with reminders of your suffering or their wrongdoing. Not ask too much right now. I'm kind of busy. I'm tired. I have a lot to late. I don't know. If you would just maybe, you know, modify your request a little, I could say that. You may notice that this sort of automatic yes is actually a no. In effect, it fails to really see the other person and questions the importance of their experience and their need. In my mind, a real yes means this. A real yes means you have dignity and worth. Your experiences, feelings, and thoughts are as important to you as mine are to me. Furthermore, recognizing that you matter in no way suggests that anyone else matters less. A real yes means that you know yourself better than anyone else does, and you are responsible for yourself. Any true help I can offer supports you in living your life and making your choices. A real yes means that I will honor your understanding of the sacred in your life and join you in protecting, nurturing, and celebrating it. Marilyn Robinson, in her novel Gilead, writes, "There are a thousand reasons to live this life, every one of them sufficient." In my experience, the moments in which we recognize one of the thousand reasons to live this life come when we give up the project of managing others, and perhaps ourselves as well, and instead pay attention and say yes to the possibility of building and supporting real relationships. Quite often, these moments are opportunities for joy, but saying yes isn't always easy. Sometimes it requires courage and discipline and careful discernment, but it is always good work. Work that makes me glad to be a human being and glad to be a Unitarian Universalist for being part of this Unitarian Universalist movement that has said yes to my life and to yours. A movement that seeks still to learn how it will be called to expand and undertakes to nurture the practices that will enable its members to respond to those calls. A movement that at its best supports us all in learning to bring our yeses to a world in need of more love, more justice. Susan wrote, "The world can learn and grow. I'm convinced of this, and that the future can be brighter than anyone thinks if we respond to others with love."